Rich Keefe Show on WEEI.
And streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
One year away from free agency with a superstar player. And we get inside, and I want to explain why, because it relates to where we're going. It relates to where we're going.
Hour number two of the Rich Keefe Show, Fitzy alongside. It's a full tank Fitzy Monday. You can join the show at 617-779-7937. You can also follow the program on Twitter and Instagram at Rich Keefe Show. That was a little taste of winter weekend, Friday and Saturday out in Springfield, Fitzy, where Heim Bloom was talking about Mookie Betts and some of the decisions the front office has made. And the crowd was mad. The crowd would talk over Heim Bloom or John Henry. They would boo. They chanted Dave, or they yelled Dave Dombrowski at one point at him. I think you knew with those guys going in front of a live audience of diehard Red Sox fans, there was a chance that they weren't just going to eat everything up. But even me, even I, was a bit surprised at just how aggressive the crowd was there. And good for them. Like, you have an opportunity to voice your displeasure with how things have gone recently. Do
it. Which is what we're here for,
yes,
correct?
Yep, absolutely. So even though I was a little bit surprised, I was happy to hear. I was happy to hear that the fans were pissed and they sort of showed their anger there.
Now, just let me walk this back a tiny little bit, or like at least understand procedurally the way winter weekend goes. So for those who may have never attended before, I know we've all talked about maybe taking a spring training trip, or maybe we'll go to, you know, Red Sox Magic Camp one day and, you know, have Dustin Pedroia teach us how to play infield and also be a tiny prick.
That seems like a whole story that we need to unpack now. Is that an interaction
with
you?
We'll get to it in the 11 o'clock.
Good now. Lord. Home of the Red Sox.
So winter weekend is basically just sort of like a fan fest.
It's Boston Comic-Con, but for Red Sox.
Okay, it's Comic-Con for Red Sox. And this was a regular Comic-Con. Do fans pay to go to this?
I believe so.
Okay, so this is only in Boston, in Red Sox Nation.
Springfield, only in Springfield.
Only in Springfield. You know, next thing I know, I ended up in Springfield on purpose. So people actually paid for the right and privilege to go to a Soxapalooza in Springfield, in Western Mass, and maybe they didn't even swing by the Deerfield location of Treehouse just to stock up on some delicious IPAs to drown their sorrows on the way home.
Stop in there.
Just so they could yell at Heim Bloom and tell John Henry he's a liar.
Yeah.
That's
also, like, there are things going around. There are players there. Maybe you got an autograph or a selfie, or maybe you got, you know, a handshake. I don't know what you really do there, to be honest. Maybe you got to see some of the Saturday WEEI programming doing live shows. I'm not sure what else was there.
Oh, my God. Is that actually Chris Kern?
People tripping over themselves. So excited.
It's like, I got a selfie with, I got Ken Laird's, you know, silver panini card.
This was just one. It's like if you go to Comic-Con and like Stan Lee speaks for 30 minutes, rest in peace. But, you know, when he did.
He probably can't now.
No, but the last Boston Comic-Con or like 5 years ago, he was there.
Right.
Not the best example, Fitzy. Just kind of hang with me here.
Maybe there's a hologram. Yeah. Who knows?
Let's say you get, you know, the third stuntman from Power Rangers. Maybe he's there.
Oh, man.
And he's doing a panel.
Red Ranger's the best.
Yeah, you got him up there. And that's like 30 minutes. So this apparently ran for about 90 minutes. And so you have Tom Caron. I think you also had Jared Karabas up there.
Karabas was there.
Yeah. Yep. So they're both asking questions. Mm-hmm. And it's Sam Kennedy, John Henry, Heim Bloom, Alex Cora. And then I think they brought in players here and there. And then I think the next day was more of the, like, guys, here's David Ortiz. Like, you can't boo David Ortiz. So, like, they would shield it a little bit more with some former players and things like that. But what you just heard was from Friday night, where it was really just the front office.
It was savage. It was
aggressive.
Absolutely. Yeah. Savage is the only way. Like, savage. That is to put it mildly. Mm-hmm. Like, the fans, all of this frustration. Again, gentle reminder, this team was in the American League Championship Series, but a year and a half ago.
Oh, you sound like you're in the front office.
Yeah. But this is the thing. Like, Rich, this is what blows my mind about this team and just everything that's gone on with the Red Sox. I'm not excusing anything. I don't agree with a majority of the decisions and the spinning and everything else they heard. For every good point Heimblum made, you know, he painted himself out of a corner, then painted himself back into two.
Yes,
what
Tom.
The Freudian routine was with him, keep saying, making all these bets. He kept saying bets over and over again. So, you know, there was
Mookie.
Some sort of tick that went off in his head.
Mookie
was
bets.
So strange. But
right.
This team has been a perennial contender. I mean, well, no, they're either finishing first place and go to the World Series, or then they go and finish in last place for 2 years.
Yeah. They ping pong or yo-yo, however you want to describe it. They are a true contender, and then they are awful.
Four World Series championships in the last 18 years, and they are easily the most hated ownership in Boston, if not maybe in professional American sports.
Yeah, in that time, they've won twice as many as the Celtics and Bruins combined. Right? They've won four. Bruins have won
yes. one.
Celtics won
even
one.
Bruins ownership is not despised as much as Red Sox ownership.
No. Now, I do think that when you get into this debate, the Patriots and Celtics ownership is always going to be looked at a little bit differently because they are fans. Like, they are self-described fans. They, you know, want the team to succeed. Like, you know, for without a doubt, they all want to make money. Nobody's an owner of a team that doesn't want to make money. But you know that Wick Rosbeck and Robert Kraft want the team to win. Like, that is a really important thing. Mm-hmm. You would kind of question that with the Bruins and with the Red Sox. You're like, are they just looking for a playoff gate? Are they just looking to be good enough? Like, what are they really trying to do here? And you're right, the Red Sox somehow, they break the 86-year drought. They win it four times in less than 20 years, and yet people are still so upset. But again, it's the combination of coming off a last-place finish and going back 3 years ago to when Mookie Betts is traded, who's one of the best players in baseball, and then this offseason, Xander Bogaerts is gone.
Mm.
So it's tough. Like, it's something that I think fans are clearly upset because they're like, what is the direction? And, you know, Heimblum, he's like puffing his chest out at the Rafael Devers announcement a couple of weeks ago, where that's only in front of media, right? Fans didn't have a chance to tell you how they felt. Be like, yeah, you got Devers, but what about these other moves? And if you weren't going to sign Bogaerts, why didn't you trade him? Like, if you're such a down-the-road strategist, how come Eovaldi, J.D. Martinez, and Xander Bogaerts just played out the string on a losing team and you didn't get anything for them?
Yeah, and if you're going to tell us that you guys need to make a certain number of moves financially and for player compensation to build, and I know Bloom kept hitting on, you know, all the bets coming through next year, and by 2024, they're really going to have the team that they believe is the next iteration of the Red Sox. Like, the Fenway future really begins next year. Okay,
but that's
fine.
That's tough, well, isn't it?
That is a tough sell in, like, baseball market. I know technically Boston is media market 10, but it's like baseball market 1 or 2 in America. Top 3 for sure. But why, when you know you've got these deep pockets of the Fenway Sports Group, when Henry bought it for $120 million and he can own a soccer club and a newspaper and a TV network and a baseball club, they're not so cash poor. I didn't hear Bill Belichick saying, well, you know, the Red Sox are only 27th in cash spending the last couple of years. And why? Then also explain to me, if you're all about 2024 and beyond, why'd you go sign a bunch of old dudes this year?
It's like 1 year.
Justin Turner,
it's like
38.
It's like, oh, you're right. It's praying for the 2013 where things just fell into place and you had these guys on cheaper deals like a Mike Napoli and a Shane Victorino and a Jake Peavy, and you were able to win it that way. Because the reality is the last two times they had a 2 year drought where they missed the playoffs, it was coming off of World Series. So it's a little bit more palpable, right? So they win it in 13 and then they missed the playoffs 14, 15. They win it in 18. They missed the playoffs in 19 and 20. And let's face it, 20 was an abbreviated season. Nobody paid attention. They were out of it.
24-36.
Couldn't go to Fenway anyway. Like, that was a lost year. So then you make the ALCS, and then I feel like they've gone back to that too many times where they've said, well, in 2021, we're two games away from a thing or from the World Series. And you're like, okay. This is also a team that's won World Series. So playing and losing in the ALCS. And now basically telling everybody that, I know we were just in last, and this year's also going to be a struggle, but don't you worry about 2024. Like, that is tough to take. We take your phone calls, though, on this. We got AJ in Rhode Island on the Red Sox winter weekend. What do you got, AJ?
What's up, Keith?
How you doing?
I'm a lifelong Sox fan, diehard Sox fan, and you know, you guys have been playing that John Henry sound all day on EEI, and every time I hear it, I just get more mad and mad. It's just like, he's so tone deaf, and he just doesn't, you know, I'm glad that the fans gave it to him. I'm glad, you know, I'm not lucky enough to be a season ticket holder, and, you know, but it's just, they need to hear the voice of the fan. They need to hear the how frustrated we are. You know, we keep spending our money at his park and on his product, but it has given us a crap product, and it's just like a slap in the face when he comes out there and it's just, well, it's expensive to own baseball, baseball team and baseball players. Well, mm-hmm. What about your other investments? What about the hockey team you just bought and right. All the other stuff? Yeah, that stuff's expensive too. But, you know, this actually means something to us here in Red Sox Nation. That's why we're so passionate about it. Yep. And I just, you know, I just wanted to get that out there.
Listen, I agree with you completely, AJ, and I think – I mean, they should know that by now. They really should, but maybe mm-hmm. this is sort of one of those reminders or a little bit of a wake-up to them, like how things are going because, you know, again, I think they're in a spot where they see Fenway Park normally pretty full. They see people singing Sweet Caroline. They're like, oh, they're into it. Their people are doing well. But that doesn't always speak very well to the entire fan base and how the majority of the fan base feels. You know, that's sort of the let's be
like
seen.
I don't like going to Selfie Park anymore.
It's tough.
Rich, if I was going to go to a Red Sox game now, whether I got tickets through the company, tickets from a buddy, mm-hmm. like my Uncle Buck or a friend who is a season ticket holder,
yeah,
who still loves going to the game and loves being there, mm-hmm. Or just took the kid, I'd take the kids,
yeah,
just so my boys could go see the greatest American ballpark and experience that. But I going there just like with the insane concession prices. The fact that my knees are up to my eyeballs
as
somebody who's over
6 feet
tall,
yeah, it's tough.
In the seating. And then, you know, people just standing up the entire time. Would you take a photo for us?
No, like, I don't want to
And,
do that.
You know, people just selfie grabbing and the sweet care. Like, yeah. it's an attraction. Like, it's basically
it's
like
a national monument.
It's turned into the Margaritaville resort of baseball parks.
Yeah, that's true. So we started at the top of the hour with the reaction that Heim Bloom got. And it wasn't just him, but it was mostly directed at Heim Bloom and John Henry. But then on Saturday, Heim Bloom was on WEEI, and he was asked about, you know, how it went on Friday.
I wasn't surprised at all. Yeah. I expected it. You know, I get it. Like, we weren't very good last year. Simple.
Yeah. What do you attribute that to? I mean, obviously you didn't put a team together thinking, oh, we're going to have a bad year. What went wrong?
No, I mean, look, we expected to be in the postseason. And I think we had a team talent-wise that was capable of doing it. I think there were a couple things. Look, some of it, you know, the breaks of the game, injuries. Look, we definitely took more than our fair share. Now, that said, there are a couple other teams in baseball that got beat up a lot. You know, some teams that sinks, a couple of them powered through that and got to the postseason. We weren't able to do that. So there's some other things, you know, just in terms of, you know, Alex has talked about this, how we played the game at times. You know, the types of at-bats we had in big situations. Obviously, our bullpen was not what it needed to be. And there were some things with how the roster came together that, you know, I look back and there were points where it didn't fit together as well as it needed to and put everybody in a bad spot.
So I hear that, Fitzy, mm-hmm. and I feel like mm-hmm. he still doesn't get it. Like, he thinks they were booing him because they were in last place. He's like, we weren't very good last year. It's like, well, they're not chanting Dave Dombrowski at you because you were in last place last year. People are pissed about Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts, and just because you signed Rafael Devers, it feels like you were forced into signing Rafael Devers. People still aren't mm-hmm. on board with the direction of the team and the moves that he has made. Go down to Kyle Schwarber or Hunter Renfro or some of the other decisions the team has made. Right. It's not just coming in last place, which is what he kind of thinks the whole reaction was about. So that's a little frustrating.
I feel like they still would have possibly, I won't say cut slack or given credit over the Mookie Betts deal, which we still to this day don't understand. Heim Bloom spent several minutes at Soxapalooza over the weekend explaining why they did it. It still made absolutely no sense to me. They easily could have afforded him. But I think the straw that broke the proverbial Sox fans' back, the season ticket holders' back, the Red Sox Nation's back was mm-hmm. broken, Rich, by this whole entire Xander Bogaerts thing, because I mm-hmm. think everyone feels like they've been lied to. And
number one priority.
It feels duplicit. It feels completely dishonest and duplicitous. Uh-huh. They're telling you, like, no, this is something we had to do. We had a feeling it was going to go this way. Like, no, you didn't. Mm-hmm. No, you didn't. You thought he would come back to you on a cheaper deal and he would give you the same kind of hometown discount he did a couple of years ago. And you full well know when he basically broke his own rule and begged for a chance to be heard from during the season, they wouldn't give him, you know, 6 years, $165 million, would have gotten the job done, and he never would have taken that lucrative offer that was drunken sailor spending by a San Diego Padres team hell-bent on getting a star.
And a nice text here from the 774. Mookie Betts used to be the only player that I'd let sleep with my wife.
Here's the old
there you go.
Pass.
So there you go. So Red Sox winter weekend is on the table. If you have any leftover thoughts on how things played out over the weekend out in Springfield, we are all ears at 617-779-7937. We'll also add into following divisional weekend. We asked this after wild card weekend, but after divisional weekend, does it make you feel better, worse, or the same about the New England Patriots? We'll get to all that coming up next year on the Rich Keefe Show with Fitzy. But right now, here's Ben Charleston with What's Trending.
WEEI, The Rich Keefe Show.
Streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
Back here on The Rich Keefe Show, WEEI, Fitzy in the house for the entire program. It's a full tang Fitzy on a snowy Monday. You can join the program at 617-779-7937. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Rich Keefe Show. So we'll get to your takeaways from the weekend and how they relate to the New England Patriots, but we're also talking about Red Sox winter weekend where Chaim Bloom, John Henry, etc. all got the boos and the shouts from the crowd there. Will that make a difference? Will that change anything? Or maybe it's just good to get it off the fans' chest. But all that on the table for you. Let's go to the phones right now, Fitzy. We got Maria in Watertown. Let's talk about the Red Sox ownership. Maria, what do you got?
What do you got? Quickly on the Patriots question, I feel worse about the Patriots situation after watching those young talent and quarterbacks this weekend. I'm not sure that the young man, and he seems like a perfectly nice young man, is as talented as those guys. So, I am in full-blown worry for that team. And with regard to the Red Sox, after hearing that cut from Chaim Bloom, the fans and season ticket holders should start booing all over again because he clearly doesn't get it. And based on what he said, if anybody has any expectations that the Red Sox will change, they are in probably for a very rude awakening. You know, the Red Sox ownership themselves set a standard for winning when they broke that curse and then won subsequent titles. How do you expect fans to react when you give them the impression that you're all in and you're committed to putting a winning team on the field? Not necessarily means you're going to win every year, but you're going to try to put a winning team on the field. And then you start pulling back and pulling back and pulling back. How do you expect fans and season ticket holders to react? It's lunacy.
I agree. Thanks for the phone call, Maria. Good stuff. And I think the point, Fitzy, too, is they are, for the first time that I can remember, under John Henry, they are so completely reliant on the prospects. They've always mixed them in, right? And there's always the perfect blend, and you always are like, oh, these are homegrown guys, and these are the guys they traded for. And they always had a good mix of both. And that's also how you can keep payroll down for certain years. If you still have the young guys, you draft and develop well. That is important. But it really feels like they're all in. And they're like, well, look at all these guys, and if all these guys hit, then we're going to be in a wave of we're going to be really good for 10 years. But there's no guarantee all those guys hit or even half of them hit.
Tristan Cassis is going to have to be the second coming of Kyle Schwarber. And Marcelo Mayer is going to need to be somewhere between Nomar and prime Alex Rodriguez. Like
they are hyping him up to that point.
Early Rangers. Seriously.
They are.
They are banking on the... And there are guys that have made a name and a mint for themselves in sports media, like the Bill Simmons of the world, who always just say the same thing. Prospects are just that. Prospects. And when they're very valuable, and this is exactly how Dombrowski worked, and it's yielded lots of success for him with ALCSs in Detroit and an NLCS World Series appearance in Philadelphia, and obviously a title here in Boston. If the shine is on them and their value may never be higher, move them for people that have actually proven to be worth something. And that's how you win at the major league. It's just so hard to think that,
but then
maybe
also,
you're going to be like the 96 Yankees and everyone's going to flourish at the same time again.
Right, exactly. And there's also something cynical that you have to be thinking where, all right, Mookie Betts was one of the guys that you drafted, developed, turned into a stud, and then didn't re-sign him.
Like,
didn't,
got nothing. Got like
got Verdugo.
A meager to modest return. I heard Bloom rattling off the what they got back, and he basically just was, trumpeting Verdugo, and then he was like, "Also, we got Carlton,
Connor Wong, and Jeter Downs,
Connor
so they
Wong
cut."
And the other guy,
Jeter Downs, was a higher rated prospect than Connor Wong, but Jeter Downs already has been cut. Connor Wong,
diffed.
He's fine, right? He's like a backup catcher.
Yeah, great.
And
backup catcher.
Verdugo couldn't be more of an average outfielder. So he's like, "What's an average major league outfielder?" It's him.
Mm-hmm.
He deserves to be in the majors, should be in the majors.
Absolutely can play
nothing,
for a couple years.
Nothing
couple
special.
Years, sure.
Like, there's no, he's not going to make an all-star team. But he's also, they're probably their best outfielder from a year ago. And we'll see what happens this year with some of the other guys. Now, Maria also hit on the point that we're going to get into, too, about how do you feel about the Patriots. And It's funny because when you look at the two conferences, like, again, the NFC, you have Brock Purdy. Like, Brock Purdy's in the NFC Championship game. Now, I know the 49ers are loaded everywhere else, but you have Brock Purdy, you have Jalen Hurts, who he is so much better this year than he was last year, and there are certainly a number of reasons. A.J. Brown's one of them, but there's a lot of reasons why he is. Then you go over to the AFC, and the top three, and you could maybe even make the case top four with Trevor Lawrence in the season that he had, are light years better than Mac Jones. Like, they're light years better than most guys. That's not even just an anti-Mac Jones take. That is those guys have put themselves in a class onto themselves. And how do you break through that? How do you beat, in today's football, the super duper star elite quarterbacks? And it's not one of them, right? It's not, oh, well, maybe Mahomes will have, his defense will be bad or his O-line will be bad. Okay. Well, then Joe Burrow's going to win. And if Joe Burrow doesn't win, like, I still think Josh Allen has a chance to win. So how do you feel better as a Patriots fan if Mac Jones is their guy? You see what their roster is. How do they compete with that upper echelon talent?
You have to look to and be watching the San Francisco 49ers as your North Star. Like, they absolutely have to be what Patriots fans pin their hopes to. Now, how in the world the Patriots are going to be able to accrue enough talent between the draft and free agency, plus whoever they have on the roster, to get to a level where they've got 2 to 3 elite receivers, one of the best 5 backs in the league, one of the top 5 tight ends, and then the best defensive front in the league. I don't know.
Yeah. It's tough. It's insane.
It is, because if Mac Jones is given everything he needs to succeed next year, new line coach, better offensive line, quality offensive coordinator, legitimate quarterbacks coach, a stud number one receiver, tight ends that can actually catch the ball and don't run into each other in the middle of the field, guess what? He's probably going to have a good season. But I don't think it's ever going to be fair to compare him, aside from the fact that they play the same position, to these other people that just have these insane athletic gifts. Like, these are all, like, Justin Herbert, especially, Trevor Lawrence, Patrick Mahomes, and to a degree Joe Burrow, although Burrow could trend as much to Mac Jones physically as he could to Justin Herbert. These guys are all X-Men.
They're insane.
Freaks.
Yeah, they are. And they're all in their prime at the exact same time, right? They're all 26, 27. Obviously, Lawrence is younger.
The conference is sick. It is absolutely stacked.
It's ridiculous. And it looked even more stacked at the beginning of the year, but Russell Wilson fell off a cliff. Derek Carr wasn't very good. And then Lamar Jackson was hurt. So it looked like it was going to be even better. Yeah, they might be. Now, I still don't know about Lamar. Like, I don't know if he just stays there and if he can be sort of like a wild card. But I feel like my takeaway from, like, the whole playoffs is, especially with the expanded field, the Patriots are right in the mix with a lot of teams that made the playoffs. But the teams that are playing this weekend, or like this upcoming weekend, they're not. Like, they're not there. But again, if you want to put them in there with the Giants or the Dolphins, the Chargers even, like, all those teams, they're right there. But what is that, right? Like, the Patriots made the playoffs a year ago, and you saw what that looked like. And, they got
their game
just doors blown
right up
off.
Right up until kickoff, it was a good time for everyone.
It was. People are in it. You're like, hey, there's a chance. Why not us? A lot of that talk. Well, turns out, because you can't force a punt, that's why not you.
Yeah, that's why not you. And listen, and to those who say Josh Allen can't play in the cold, sure as hell played very well in the cold last year.
Yeah, he did.
It had nothing to do with the win game, the rugby match in December.
Brian Daboll helps a little bit.
It was freezing cold up there, and he played just fine. Mac Jones, I think, look, I still have the hardest time trying to, like, get the jury out on Mac Jones or make a full statement claim on what he is and I think where he can go and what his potential is, because his entire sophomore season was completely robbed of him.
Well,
like it was such a disaster.
No, it is. And I feel like it's difficult for anybody to be so sure on him. Like, mm-hmm. the only thing I'm sure of is he's not a top three quarterback in the NFL, and he's probably not a bottom three quarterback.
He's not top four in his own conference, Rich.
No, he's not. He definitely, but I'm saying even like ceiling, best case scenario, all things at play. Like, right. No, he's not that. But there's a big middle area every year in the NFL. And if you're atop of that middle, you might peak out as the eighth best quarterback that year. Like a Kirk mm-hmm. Cousins occasionally can play like a, and that's not a great example, and he was awful in the playoff game. But you know what I'm saying? Like there are times where Dak Prescott's a top 10 quarterback. Sometimes. Then you see him another game, and you're like, that's the 20th best quarterback in the league. And
that must be the first time that young man ever played the position.
Yeah, that was nice they let him try it.
Yeah, he's just everyone's really athletic friend. And they said, well, you're fast, Dakota. You got a good arm. I remember when you pitched in high school. You could probably play quarterback. But it's so difficult.
But that's kind of how I feel like that. I think there's like maybe seven. Maybe you go as deep as seven, and you're like, they're supplanted. And maybe one will, you know. He'll be the third best and then back down to the seventh. And then there's this huge gap in the middle where if you're on the low end of the middle, all of a sudden you're pushing like 24. And you're like, ugh, like mm-hmm. you're now maybe in the bottom third. And let's face it, Mac Jones, for what he had around him, because guess what? Not everybody is playing in an equal spot. Not everybody has the same coordinator or offensive line or wide receiver. Mm-hmm. You can't say Mac Jones had a good year. In fact, he had a terrible year. But does that make him a terrible quarterback? Like, well, I think we'll have a better idea next year. And I hate being, especially as a radio person, like, let's see what he is next year. Because we have to live in the second, right? We have to live in what's going on right now. Right now, he sucked. But I'm not ready to say he's completely trash washed and you got to get rid of him. Like, I'm not there yet.
No, but here's something that does bother me. It didn't get to me as much last year because I think I saw enough from him to take heart for the future, and I got excited about what he may develop into and the direction of the team turning around after Cam and Brady's departure. Mac doesn't have a signature win, really, to me. Mac does not have a signature comeback yet. I know it's only two seasons in, but I think two seasons in with Mahomes, two seasons in with Burrow, at the tail end of Josh Allen's second season, you saw what you needed to see to say, this guy's him for us for a long time to come. Whether it's the bad play calling of Patricia, Josh putting the restrictor plates and the granny panties on him last year and being a helicopter parent of an offensive coordinator, I still haven't seen that something where Mac put the team on his shoulder. Rich, whether you are
that's a good point.
A physical freak or whether you are just a brilliant game manager with a decent NFL arm, at some point or another, you are going to have to put the team on your back and carry them to victory and will them to overcome great odds. I haven't seen that yet for Mac Jones. That's what I'm going to need to see next year if he has given the full comportment of what he needs to succeed.
No, that's a really good point. I think another way of looking at it is, has he ever had any great games, and you know, use whatever stat you want or eye test, has he had any great games in a close game? I feel like even going back to his rookie year, there were some numbers where like, oh, look at that, like three touchdowns, and they blow out the Jets were never even in it. Like, has he had a signature?
They kicked the Jaguars' ass on January 2nd.
Great.
Big deal.
Yeah, you pad stats a little bit in a game like that. But that's a great point. Like, he doesn't have the signature win. And at the risk of piling on, I don't know if he has a signature skill set. Like, everybody's like, oh, his brain. I'm like, all right, well, that's not very how do we measure that? You know, like, does he have a strong arm? No. Is he super accurate? Turns out, no. Does he have really good pocket presence? No. And so I don't know how much of that is you're not trusting the play caller and you're not trusting the line in front of you. Like, that's going to make a lot of quarterbacks look bad. But there's nothing
Into pressures and running into sacks? Hell yeah.
Yeah, oh, of course. But there's nothing he does on a field where you're like, oh, that's as good as anybody else in the league. Right? I mean, it just isn't. And I think that's sort of when you're watching a game of Mahomes, well, while he was healthy or when he was out there, Mahomes versus Trevor Lawrence, and then you're watching Burrow and Allen. Even not a good Allen game, you just see how they play the position. And again, we'll get into this more next hour, but with these quarterbacks in the conference, it's not like the unicorn, or it's not even like, well, Brady Manning. Because after Brady Manning, there was a huge drop-off for many years. Like, it was like Philip Rivers or Roethlisberger or like somebody like that where they're not in that top two tier. The AFC now is like a different animal with all these guys coming together at the same time. And that formula to knock them off is going to be one, I don't think really achievable. And that, to me, isn't just for the Patriots. It's for all those teams in the AFC. But if some team does pull it off, like, I don't know how they do it. Unless the San Francisco 49ers get dropped into the AFC suddenly. Like, I don't know how that
conference
gets done.
Conference realignment? Yeah.
Yeah, got, but the side conference realignment. Back to the phones. We got Matt in Rhode Island who wants to talk about Joe Burrow. What do you got, Matt?
Yes. Hi, guys. How you doing? But first, can I request, Mr. Keith, I'd like to profess my love for two people, and I promise I'll keep it clean. In a second, I'll tie it into my call.
That's fine.
Okay. Maria from Watertown, your calls are electric. I find you fascinating. Great, great sports radio call. I got a crush on Maria from Watertown.
All right.
Secondly, Joe Burrow is my guy crush.
That's pretty cool.
This week, this weekend, I was watching, the whole thing about how they sold tickets to the AFC Championship game for Buffalo and Kansas City, and like Cincinnati really took that personally.
Yeah.
I jumped on there with the money line bet. It was all good. But Joe Burrow, he never ceases to amaze me. He's so cool. And like, I think Matt could actually learn a lot from like watching this kid.
Yeah, he's the coolest guy in the world, Matt. No, I agree with you. And I'm not even.
That's a good point.
In fact, how about this? So there was that big to do about the AFC title game being at a neutral site. If it was Bills and Chiefs, obviously,
and
the
it was
Bengals,
a whole to do. By the way,
it was
definitely it reached full to do. It almost got to be a hullabaloo, but it was definitely a to do.
To do, no doubt, nobody's going to argue it wasn't a to do, and it really served as a motivator to Cincinnati of all things. Like they were the one that was getting screwed. They had a chance to get screwed the round before if Baltimore
exactly.
had beaten them. So they were like nobody was thinking about Cincinnati. So of course. Walking off the field after the win, Joe Burrow was asked about it.
We talked about it yesterday, just that chip on your shoulder. Everyone talking about a neutral AFC Championship game, not even thinking about you guys. How much did that motivate you coming into this?
You better send those refunds.
Oof.
Guys, cool as hell. Did you see
that's what a killer says. That's what
he's a killer.
That's what an ice yeah. cold kill. That's John Wick, the quarterback right there. Doesn't care.
He is. He's John. Did you see what he did the other day, which might have been one of the coolest things I think anybody's ever done, is the video of him walking into the stadium 2 weeks ago when they were playing Baltimore, and Chris Collinsworth was in front of him, like, checking a bag, and Joe Burrow walks behind him, taps him on the left shoulder, and walks by him straight on the right side. And, so Collinsworth does the old, like, is he over here? Nope, he's over here. But Burrow never even turned around to acknowledge that he got him. He just tapped him on the left shoulder, walked by him on the right side, and Collinsworth, like, puts his hands in the air or whatever, and Burrow just keeps walking.
He's got somewhere
coolest
to be.
Thing in the world.
He doesn't care. Doesn't matter even if this is, like, a legacy, a top 10 player in franchise history. Now, here's a guy who knows how to tap on the shoulder and pass on the right, Mike.
It was pretty great. Like, that guy pulled it off. Did you see what sweatpants he was wearing after the game?
No.
Seinfeld sweatpants. It had like the logo, like the font, like the Seinfeld kind of whatever it is. It like
does what he wants.
Yeah, my God, that guy's so cool.
Dude, Rich, I almost wonder,
yeah.
Is Joe Burrow so cool?
How cool is he?
Is he so cool that he's actually going to make Cincinnati cool? Like,
yeah.
So Cincinnati might be top five uncoolest cities in America.
I've never been to Cincinnati.
I have been there several times.
Okay, first question, why?
A, for work, when
when I worked for the Reds.
For when I worked for ESPN 15 years ago.
Got it.
Ended up in Cincinnati a few times. B, college roommate from Cincinnati.
Oh, okay.
Gone to sporting events, golf trips, etc. It's Cincinnati. I mean, when people are like, yep, it's the Queen City. What are you guys known for? We got a really neat chili. It's about all they got going. But Joe Burrow might make it cool. And I've been sitting on this for a couple minutes between the...
Oh, yeah?
here's the worst part. No, this is the worst part.
Yeah.
When you were going over like all the quarterbacks that might be in front of Mac, which may make it difficult for the Patriots to get above division winner or to get a home playoff game anytime soon, the worst part is you could very well see, in addition to Herbert and Allen and Burrow and Mahomes, and I thought that was a very good comp of having Roethlisberger and Phillip Rivers as the C and the D to Brady's A and B for all that time. What if you end up getting Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud or both dropped into the conference, one on the Texans and one on the Colts? And that's a very likely scenario. Now you could be talking about a complete conference full of studs for decades to come.
Jeez. ridiculous. No, it is. It is. It's absolutely ridiculous. And you know the Jets are going to be desperate to get somebody in there, and I'm not saying it's through the draft, but they got to find a way to get somebody to join that group. And I know Miami says they're committed to Tua, but that also sounds like something you say right before you get rid of them. So, yeah, the quarterback thing is nuts. We got some big Rich Keefe Show stats and facts about that coming up at the stroke of 8 o'clock. But we got a little update on the Patriots offensive coordinator search, at least in how it's being done. We'll get to that coming up next year on the Rich Keefe Show with Fitzy on WEEI.
This is the Rich Keefe Show on Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
Back here on the Rich Keefe Show, WEEI, Fitzy is here as well. And looks like we got some news about the offensive coordinator search, Fitzy, for your New England Patriots. Names still remain the same five names. Bill O'Brien, Nick Haley, Sean Jefferson, Keenan McCardell, and Adrian Clem. According to Tommy Curran, how about Gerard Mayo apparently involved in the interviews? He's right there with Bill.
And there we were wondering last week if Patricia would sit in on the interviews, if Robert Kraft would be there for the initial interviews. Turns out we were wrong. We were right to inquire, but we were wrong. It was Gerard Mayo all along. And Rich, this continues to beef up or semi-validate the idea that Gerard Mayo is going to be your next head coach of the New England Patriots.
I feel like without a doubt he is going
massive amounts of input he's getting now.
Yeah, I feel like for him to turn down the Browns defensive coordinator interview, that's one thing. But when he said no to the Panthers head coaching job, I thought it was a done deal. Now, he might not know what year he's taking over, but if he's patient, it will be him. Maybe Bill has 2 years. Maybe he has 3 years. I don't think anybody's really predicting four plus. Stranger things have happened, but I don't know if anybody's going there yet. I also would be surprised if it's just one. I think, you know, Shula's record is within reach. So, I don't know. I think Mayo is for sure the coach in waiting. Who knows what his title is going to be? It probably won't be defensive coordinator. Maybe associate head coach or assistant head coach or whatever. That doesn't
really
matter.
Assistant head coach is a fair guess. And I wouldn't be surprised if his weekly responsibilities of helping run some of the defensive meetings, preparing the game plan with Steve are kept the same. And maybe he even gets a few more responsibilities, but you'll still see Steve as the defensive play caller on Sundays, I believe. But this is all tracking for him to be the next head coach in two, 3 years.
Oh, my God. Because think about this. Say Charlie Weiss left and Romeo Crennel didn't back in the day when they both left at the same time. Do you think Romeo Crennel would sit in on the interview for the next offensive coordinator?
He sure wouldn't.
I didn't think so. I didn't think, like, normally, now he might run it by him, and again, a veteran coach and all that stuff, but Gerard Mayo, who's technically just the inside linebackers coach, is now taking part in the interviews for the OC. So, yeah, he's the coach in waiting. I think that's pretty clear.
That's a scoop. That's a bit. That's a big one. I mean, if that doesn't, if there's anyone who wants to push back against that, I would love to hear why.
Yeah, I don't know. I love it. And again, I think the timing, and I wonder if Bill loves it. And, like, does he feel like, hey, maybe I want 3 years, and they're telling him, no, you have two? Like, that, there could be some details in there which could be a little interesting. Also, it sounded like it was all video conferences for the interviews.
All five. Five for five on the Zuma.
You don't want to do that in person? It's a pretty big job. I guess they're like, listen, we're giving it to Bill O'Brien. We're not going to make Sean Jefferson fly all the way out here.
Yeah.
That's
Adrian
how I view
Clem's
it.
In Oregon. We're not going to make you take transcontinental flight just so you can come here, shake our hands, and have me grumble at you and offer you some cold Davios.
Now, I don't know if we can bet on this in Vegas or not, but do you think Bill will text the wrong person that they got the job?
Oh, 100%.
There's a chance that he goes to the wrong guy.
Now, which Bill is in his phone?
Walsh. He'll text Bill Walsh. No, I'm getting an update now. He will not be texting Bill Walsh. yeah, that's different than not. Yeah, what other Bills is he?
Legendary character actor Bill Dukes.
Could be. I wouldn't rule it out.
I don't know if he's still coming.
Former Sox third baseman Billy Miller.
Bill Miller.
Yeah, Bill Miller will get it. He'll get on the horn. And how about this little nugget? Tommy Curran is just full of them over the weekend. Matt Patricia might just be packing his bags and leaving.
Yeah, he told us yesterday in his weekly spot on the 17-hour WEEI Football Sunday extravaganza.
No, you know what you guys need? You just need to get a 10-person panel like Fox, and then that show will go over in the blink of an eye.
We came pretty close yesterday. We had Curran at 11.
Yep.
We had Kyrie at 1, okay. And then we had Shime at 2.
All right, the closer.
I just need an ex lineman,
so
former head coach.
Shime ended up being your Kira Cedric in that scenario. Comes in, closes the deal. Not bad. But Matt Patricia, I'm shocked. I'm actually shocked
Chris
by this.
Chris Shime or Ryan Brazier?
Like Rob Dibble? Or do you like Chris Shime? I like Chris Shime. But do you? I'm surprised by this. And so they're like, the Detroit Lions are no longer paying him, so we don't want him on the staff. Like we don't want him around. Like I would have thought they would have even made up a role for this guy. Like Belichick likes him so much, and he just went from having. What, three jobs that he shouldn't have had? Or at least two jobs he shouldn't have had because he was getting paid by Detroit, and now you're just going to get rid of him altogether? It makes this whole operation look even dumber than it was.
Are they going to get rid of him, or is he going to be offered some sort of relocation or reassignment, and he's not going to approve of it, and then he'll depart because...
Where's he going?
How could he have fallen so far out of favor as, like, the ultimate fob?
Yeah,
like,
but where's he going?
That's it. I
nowhere. Nobody Tufts. Wants him. Tufts.
Tesla?
I don't
Lockheed
think,
Martin?
Andy Hart would get on the board with all the alumni and be like, we got to block this. We're going to Tufts. No, I don't think he's going there. Yeah, I guess he's a rocket scientist. I guess he could do that. But the Patriots, I thought, like, senior football advisor is such a who knows what the hell they even do.
It is the most nebulous term possible.
Yeah. They just do that. Do more of that. Have more of that.
I thought we all had pegged him as, like, Ernie Adams 2.0.
Yeah. Adams,
just go be in the skybox, you know, look in the tablet, check out the binoculars.
Again,
turn off the hot water in the opponent's locker room, just, you know.
But if Curran says it, like, I believe it. But I am surprised by this, and it's funny because last year, well, not that funny, actually. Mm. The last year, we were led to believe that they didn't go after Bill O'Brien because they wanted an offensive coordinator that was going to be here longer than a year, mm-hmm. and yet they put in place a guy who's getting paid by the Lions for one more year, and then they were going to get rid of him anyway. Unless he did really good, but like he clearly didn't.
But that was something that some in this particular market, some who even work at our radio station, deemed from Paul Perillo at Patriots.com to his old cohort and our pal Andy Hart, they had deemed that a fireable offense. If they decided to just use him as an alternatively compensated holding pattern at offensive coordinator.
He's the Justin Turner of the Patriots. So all
and
that
Belichick texted him to get him to come to town, so it's an apt comp to me.
It's all working together. So all that's on the table. We were talking Red Sox winner weekend and the fallout from that. Patriots offensive coordinator search. Again, still the five names. They haven't officially named Bill O'Brien yet. We're all waiting for that opportunity to announce it. And then Jerod Mayo, apparently, though, sitting in on those interviews. Now, I had teased this early, maybe even too early. The audience is changing over quite often. But I got some big-time stats as it relates to the big quarterbacks that are remaining in the AFC playoffs and how it relates to maybe a previous generation. So 2 hours down, two to go on the Rich Keefe Show with Fitzy here on WEEI.